Hello and welcome to the Hidden History of Texas, episode 48, Slaves and Slavery in Texas, Part 1, The Early Years. I'm your host and guide, Hank Wilson, and as always, brought to you by Ashby, Navis, and Tennyson and Media Publishers, producers of a comprehensive catalog of audiobooks and high-quality games, productivity, and mental health apps. Visit ashbynavis.com for more information. In this episode, I'm going to talk about something that might make some folks a tad uncomfortable, and that's because this will be the first of two parts where I'm going to talk about slaves and slavery in Texas. Slaves and slavery is a historical reality, not only in Texas, but around the world. This program is focused on the history of Texas, so I won't go into the worldwide history of slavery or the fact that it still takes place around the world. I will also not discuss how the indigenous people who were on the continent before the Spanish bumped into it also made slaves out of their conquered enemies. That is actually for another episode that's in the planning stage that I'm working on about the history of the Americas before they became the Americas. No, in this episode, I'm going to concentrate on the issue of the slaves and slavery of African peoples, first by the Spanish, Portuguese, and English, and then in the next episode, I'll discuss the issue as it took place under the Anglos who took over Texas. The first slaves brought into what the Spanish called New Spain, now Mexico, were in fact Africans taken from their homelands and brought to the continent as part of the 1519 invasion led by Hernan Cortes. After Cortes opened the door, after 1580, there was a steady stream of African slaves that were brought over because Portugal gave Spain easy access to the Portuguese slave network. By 1640, more than 275,000 Africans had been taken from their homelands and sent to New Spain. Now, since the slaves were considered commodities, once it became less profitable, the importing almost completely came to an end. By 1646, in a total population of over 1.7 million, New Spain's African population, both native-born and those born in New Spain, outnumbered Europeans 35,000 to about 13,000. That's enough now about what happened in Mexico. There's a lot more about that, too. But now let's talk about Texas. The first slave brought into Texas was Esteban, or Estevanico. He was one of the four survivors of the failed Panfilo de Narvaez expedition to Florida. Now, if you remember from earlier broadcast, they were headed to Florida, but took a left instead of a right and ended up wrecking on the Texas coast in 1528. Esteban was the slave of Andres Dorantes de Carranza and was described by Alvar Nunez Cabeza de Vaca, who kept track of what happened to the survivors as they traveled through Texas and the Southwest, as a black Arab from Azamor. Azamor is a Moroccan town on the coast that had been captured by the Portuguese in 1513. Additionally, in the Coronado expedition were several other enslaved black people, seven of whom were actually owned by Francisco Varquez de Coronado. They were with him as the expedition crossed the Texas Panhandle in 1541. Now, the fact that there was a substantial numbers of people who were Afro-Mexicans in the northeastern frontier of New Mexico, or New Spain, rather, northern Mexico and Texas, by the latter part of the half of the 17th century means that they took part in the many expeditions of the Spanish into present-day Texas. Those expeditions began in the 1680s, and at least one Afro-Mexican, Juan de la Concepcion, was a part of the Domingo Ramon expedition that started the settlement of East Texas. Afro-Mexicans were almost certainly brought into Texas by Governor Martin de Alarcón's expedition that founded San Antonio. Then again, during the 1721-1722 campaign to finish the occupation of Spanish Texas and the founding of La Bahia. In other words, people of African descent who were absolutely a part of the general Hispanic population of New Spain and from the very beginning were well represented in Texas. The Spanish colonies had a very clear-cut hierarchy when it came to social status. Those from Spain were at the top, followed by what today we would call caste or groups, lineage. For example, the lighter a person's skin, the higher up on the ladder they ranked. That meant that both the indigenous people and those from Africa were at the bottom. Even among those groups, if a person had a lighter skin tone, then they might be able to pass and gain acceptance in one of the higher social groups. When we examine the records from those days, when we take a look at them, okay, we find that in San Antonio, those labels were often just given to a person regardless of anything else, okay? Now, the one exception was when a person served in the military. Now, then they were mostly listed as a soldier. However, when they went back to civilian life, their old label would often be given back to them. When we look at the Spanish census figures from around 1790 through 1820, the populations listed are really approximate. For example, in 1792, the civilian census showed 415 mulattoes and 40 blacks in a total reported population of 2,961. It also showed 367 individuals as others. This tends to be a reflection of how ambiguous many mixed-blood members of Hispanic Texas were viewed. The records show that among those Texans who were from African descent, their status ranged from slave to property owner. In the 1779 census of households reported mulatto farmers, tailors, masons, blacksmiths, carpenters, field hands, and day laborers. In fact, one mulatto, Pedro Huzar, was listed in the 1779 census as a sculptor. He is credited with having sculpted the rose window and facade of the San Jose Mission Church and went on to perform numerous surveying, construction, and administrative jobs for the government. Now, not surprisingly, by 1798, he was listed in census records as a Spaniard, holding the honorific or the name, the label, of Don. Now, unlike the slaves in England's American colonies, who were mostly field workers, in New Spain, that was only a small portion of the population. The majority of the slaves in New Spain were there to provide domestic service and held as a matter of status. Slavery was very much a part of the lifestyle of governors, military officers, and a few prosperous individuals. Now, a unique part of the system was the law actually seemed to respect the individual rights of slaves, and that included their right to gain their freedom. Slaves were permitted to file complaints about abuse and any crime committed against them or their property. They could seek freedom by purchasing or even seek a new master if they could demonstrate good cause. Now, another right they held was upon the death of their owners, they were often freed. Now, in one such case, upon his death in 1779, Juan Flores de Abrego freed his female slave, but ordered that his male slave remain the property of his wife until she died. The slave's ownership was then to return to the estate. At the same time, both Texas and Florida slaves had the right of asylum of foreign slaves who sought refuge inside the Spanish colony. When we look at any of the correspondence that survives from such cases, it's clear that the official took very seriously the legal rights of both the owners and the individual rights of the runaways. The social status classifications and were often very discriminatory parts of the Spanish legal system. It was very reflective of the attitudes that existed towards people of African descent. In fact, much like today, certain words were considered an insult. If a person was called a mulatto or as sometimes happened, a mulatto dog, that person had grounds for legal actions, and many times a violent reaction was not only expected but approved. Governor Domingo Cabello y Robles once felt that he had been offended by a member of the prominent Manchaca family. Cabello remarked to one of his superior officers that the Manchacas were no more than poor mulattos. Okay, now once Spain and Mexico outlawed slavery, that still did not ease the tension between the peoples. In fact, the problem of slavery and race relations took a new and difficult turn for the Hispanic Texan population as a whole with the arrival of Anglo-American settlers in the course of the 1820s. I'll deal with those issues in the next episode. Please subscribe to the podcast. I'm back, and I'll keep posting new episodes. Sometimes, though, as I said, life gets in the way, which is why there's sometimes a gap between episodes. If you want more information on Texas history, this is where I get a lot of my information, plus a lot of research. Visit the website of the Texas State Historical Association. I also have 4 audiobooks on the hidden history of Texas. The Spanish Bump into Texas, 1530s to 1820s. Here Come the Anglos, 1820s to 1830s. Years of Revolution, 1830 to 1836. And my latest, A Failing Republic Becomes a State, 1836 to 1850. You can find the books pretty much wherever you download or listen to audiobooks. Just do a search for The Hidden History of Texas by Hank Wilson. They'll pop right up. Or visit my website, arctx.org, arctx.org. By the way, if you like audiobooks, visit my publisher's website. There's an incredible selection of audiobooks there. In addition to mine, you'll find the classics, horror, science fiction, mental health, and much, much more. Check it out. Visit ashbynavis.com. That's ashbynavis.com. Thanks for listening, y'all. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.